We are blessed to be here together and seek the face of the Lord on some extremely important things in regards to the tabernacle in the wilderness and the power of that understanding of where we are today and who we are. And when you realize how long ago this was, and you understand that God is really in control. When he gave a picture this long ago of what things really mean, very, very, very powerful. So I just wanted to go over some of those things today. Most of you are aware that our website is up, and www.mygHCF.com. So go ahead and all the things that we do here will be online. So the stuff is taped. We'll have some of the handouts online. So if you miss anything, just go online and just run off your copies. So that way, if you're traveling, you can still catch up on some things. But I urge you to use that in conjunction with what we do here. Carolyn, if you just give everyone a little study. GF. It's the initials of the church. Great Hope Christian Fellowship. MyGHCF.com. And I am going to be using some of the overheads, which anyone listening to the audio is not going to be able to see them. But I did have a first little beginning overhead here. I'm going to be using a combination of the overheads and the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint pictures of the tabernacle will be online also. And but this is a little question that says, in all organizations, there's these kind of things. There's the wishbones. Those are the people that just wish for things. There's the jawbones. Those are the people that just talk and yak about it. There's the knucklebone, who knuckles or knocks everything you do. And there's the backbone, and that's the steadfast worker in it all. And our question to everyone is, which one are you? In all organizations, you have these kind of things. Some people are wishing and hoping. Some people are just talking. Some people, no matter what you do, they've got a complaint on it. But then there's the backbone, and that's the steadfast worker in it all. God wants us to be the backbone, not just of an organization, but of the body of Christ. He wants us to have that stamina and that stability in that. And what I wanted to do tonight was to... I hope I brought the oil. Okay. What I want to do is I have a couple of things that that I put together on what the temple looked like, because I want us to get a kind of a visual. We're going to have to kind of have the visual in our minds as we go along. And I'm going to switch here from this to this, and we'll see how that goes. Oh, good. It's a nobody screen here. We should have this up and running in just a moment. Best laid plans of mice and men. Oh, there it is. Okay. We've got it. The tabernacle in the wilderness really is the road to Jesus. I mean, there's no two ways about this. This is so powerful. It is a picture of God's message to us, his salvation for us. It's also a picture of who we are to be today. We hear the term the temple of the Spirit. We are the temple of the Spirit here and now. Well, the temple included the tabernacle. So this is to be the tabernacle. Our bodies are the outer court, so to speak, the stuff that's out here in the world. Our soul is the holy place, and our spirit, where God dwells, is the most holy place, or the holiest of holies. Boy, I tell you, it's like, oh, wow, Lord. Boy, you really know what you're talking about. Remember he said, let us make man in our image? He wasn't talking about eyes and nose and all that. There's three portions of the Lord in one. There's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Not three gods. Not three different anything, all in one. Now, how can that be? Well, don't you have a mind, will, and emotions? Those are three separate entities. They do have distinct functions and are definable as different. But you aren't three people. You are one person with those distinct functions within. God is one God with those distinct functions within, Father, Son, and Spirit. The tabernacle has the courtyard, the holy place, and the holiest of holies. I'm going, whoa. This is, you see, we only know about this because God's already written it. God's given us direction. He teaches by His Spirit. He started all of this before He even created anything, when all was just a void, just Him in existence. He knew all of this. This really makes me get on my knees in awe before a great God. This God is worthy to be praised no matter what happens on the planet. He is not causing the babies to die and the wars to happen, the people to fight and the marriages to break up. God is not causing that at all. Everything is under His hand. He allows all things, but only to a certain point within His plan. But it's the broken nature of man that is doing all of the death and destruction. And by coming to God through Jesus Christ, you can actually have a different nature enter into you that you weren't born with. That old Adam nature will never go away, but we can make it so it doesn't rule. And when you have God nature in you, that is the perfect way to think, the perfect way to feel, the perfect way to desire. It will never lead you to sin. It will never get you in trouble. It will always give you the wisdom and the power of God. Now, we are not all there to have that constantly flowing through us 100% of the day, but we should be getting there. We should be striving toward dying to self, crucifying the flesh, so that we actually get to the point that we are a walking tabernacle in the wilderness that has all of the components and compartments that God talks about. And as we learn about this, it's going to help us in our spiritual journey. And on this, I've got some pictures here of the tabernacle. And for those that are listening in the audio, it'll be posted on the website also. Now, this is one of the better pictures that I found of what it looked like. Now, I'm not going to read over the scriptures. It's far too numerous. There's about 37 chapters in the Old Testament that talk about the tabernacle in the wilderness. I'll give you those. They may be on your handouts, or I'll give them to you tonight as we go along. But I just wanted to give us a broad overview. I want you to keep this visual and the others that I've researched and brought to here. This is the outside fence that was all around, and it was a specific measurement. It had to be so long and so wide and so high. And these are all, you can see how they're kept here. Now, this was portable because they set it up wherever they stayed. And all around, and there's another picture, all around the perimeter is where the different 12 tribes would have their camp areas. Now, there's only one door into the entrance of this place where God is. Now, isn't that amazing that that's what God told them to do? They didn't know anything about Jesus dying and all of what He's going to go through that we know about, because we're after the point. There was one entrance. There is only one way to get into the holiest of holies, and that's the presence of God, and that is Jesus Christ. So powerful. When you first come in, the first thing you see is the altar of sacrifice. Isn't that amazing? Only one way to get in, and there's only one way you can do that, and that is through a blood sacrifice. And then you can see the little tables and the animals and the priests here. That's where they would slaughter the sacrifice and offer up the sacrifice to be burned up. And you can see a little ramp going up here to bring that to the fire area. This is the bronze laver. It's the washing bowl. The priests had to wash. And what do we know about that washing? God said to be washed by the water of the Word. And I go, whoa, This is powerful, Lord. So in my being, you know, have I entered in through Jesus Christ? Do I have I put myself on the altar of sacrifice? Am I constantly in the Word so that I can be a priest, you see? God wants us a nation of priests, you see. He said to Israel, he wants the same for us. Am I being washed in the water of the Word? Now, this was the actual tabernacle itself, and there were two compartments in here. Now, the people could come in here to the courtyard to bring their sacrifice for their sins, but only the priests could come in here, and only those from the line of Levi. And they didn't own land and animals and stuff, and you had to own land, not land back then because they were traveling, but you had to own cows and things like that to have your milks and your foods, and they used the skins of the animals. They used the wool of the lamb to make the clothes. So the priesthood, because they had all of this to take care of daily, there were rules. Oh my gosh, the chapters on their rules, how they had to stack it up, line it up, chop it up, and do all these things was severe. They full-time ministered to what God said to do in the temple. So they didn't work outside of that. That's why others brought 10% of their lambs and their hogs, dogs, and frogs and everything into the temple. Some of it went to a sacrifice before the Lord, but some of the meats and some of the foods and some of the animals and things went to the priests because they had to have that for their sustenance. God does the same thing here. That's why we put together to keep our little tabernacle going and to those that work here to have that done. So in here is the holy place, which is the beginning, and it will see what's inside that. And then behind that there's a veil right about there, and it separates the holiest of holies. Once a year, the high priest only. Now, he not only had to be from the tribe of Levi, he had to be from the lineage of Aaron. So that was even more specific. So only once a year would they be able to go into the whole, this was called the most holy place or the holiest of holies. And I always love that word, the holiest of holies. And that's where God, the power of God, the very presence of God came and accepted the sacrifice. Now you can see there's coverings, there's layers of coverings over here. So when God told them to move, remember they had the fire by night and the cloud during the day, and wherever the cloud stayed, they had to stay there. And the fire stayed. Now that might have been 2 weeks, 6 months, whatever it was. When they moved, they had to pack all this stuff up and they had to move it to the next place where they would go. And Karen and Shem and I are going to go up and do some hiking. I just thank God we don't have to set all that up to go to our next shelter. But they had a whole army, so to speak, of people that were working with this stuff. But that holiest of holies back in here was where God came to meet his people. That's what's so powerful that I know, because it's daily with us. We don't have to wait once a year. You see, Jesus hadn't come back here. So they had a whole different structure, and it was all physical. It was all physical, and it was all law, and it was all legal. None of which we have now. There's no more laws. What we do is we, in loving God, you put away the broken ideas, and you go with the whole ideas. So it's not because it's law. That's what they had to do. If they didn't obey the law, they were punished by God. You obey the law, God says, you obey, you get blessings. You disobey, you get curses. It was very black and white, and it had to be. There was no in-between places. God has mercy and compassion and love. So many things have entered into the new covenant. But he made it tighter, not looser. Before it was said, if you murder someone, you've broken the law. I say, if you even have hatred in your heart, you're accountable now. See, so because the Spirit of God can dwell in us, the accountability is different. We now have the ability to not sin. You're born unable to stop sinning. That's it. You can be a good person, but you can't stop sinning. It is impossible. That's why if someone doesn't have that unique experience of salvation in Jesus Christ, they can't get to heaven. It's not like hell is a punishment, although it is. It's just that you can't be in God's presence if all you have is the broken nature you were born with, because it can do nothing else. Can you imagine someone with that broken nature going to heaven, like some of these people say God's just going to forgive everyone, and that broken nature gets up there, all of this chaos is going to start again. All of the anger, and eventually the anger, the lust, the jealousies, the dissensions, all that junk is going to... God says, that is not nothing unholy can come into the presence of God. The only way we can come into His presence is by what Jesus Christ did. Our gratitude ought to be so high that the things of the earth stop bothering us so much. That's all that counts. He's rescued us. Talk about a sheepdog. God has saved us and rescued us from ourselves. And I know, because I know how I grew up. And I know the moral code that was brought up under good doctrine. And I walked away from it. But God knew I didn't have that unique experience with Him. I had a religious experience, not a relational experience. But He captured my heart because He knew that I would turn to Him. So He didn't count all the wrong I did for the first 30 years of my life. But from that point on, now there's an accountability to Him. And there's a steadfastness to Him. And that's what we need to have. We need to be encouraged in every single thing. Now, as we look at the next one, now, any questions on this and the overview of the tabernacle? This was a nice picture that they actually have set this up. It's someplace out in Israel. And someone did this, and they've actually set up a tabernacle according to exactly the same dimensions. But this is one actually out in the outside, and it gives you a rough idea how big it was. And this is the actual tabernacle in there and all the stuff. We'll see some of the other things. But it was kind of unique seeing the tabernacle in a wilderness setting. Now, this is a component here. I like this because it's like if you were in an airplane looking down on the tabernacle, this is what it was. This is that courtyard with the one entranceway in it that we talked about with the altar of sacrifice and the brass laver over here. And then inside here is the holy place. You can see the difference, and that's the most holy place separated by the curtain. So here's the holy place. The candlesticks are over here. And well, they weren't candlesticks. They really were oil that they had in there. Sometimes some pictures depict the candlesticks, but they use the oil. And then the table of shewbread, which is or sometimes called showbread, which is an unleavened bread. And unleavened, tremendous significance. I mean, there's a lot of things that have significance in here. So the shewbread. And then the altar of incense. Well, I tell you, if there isn't, that was to signify praise. That was a sweet fragrance. The incense isn't like the cheap junk you buy in a shop today. This was some really nice stuff that they had. And we're going to go over some of that incense, what they had over there. But it was very pleasant smelling. And they would have that going up constantly to the Lord. So our praises. We're supposed to eat of He's the bread of life. We're supposed to eat of His body. And He's the light of the world. I mean, all these things are tremendously significant. All the things we talked about in the courtyard, and now the light of the world with the candlestick, the bread, He's the bread of life, the incense, the altar of incense to symbolize what we're supposed to be doing constantly, and then the most holy place or the holiest of holies. That's where the Ark of the Covenant was, and there were some things in the Ark of the Covenant, and that's where the high priest went once a year. Now, there's a lot of people say they tied a rope around them. You know, I've heard that before too. But I'm here to tell you, I got to thinking on that. Now, I'm not saying God showed me this. I just got to thinking on it. There's no high priest in his right mind that would have gone in there in any dirty manner, that he didn't do all the ablutions and he didn't do all the things where all, there's no one of them in their right mind, because they knew that there's nothing, not a speck could be wrong with them to get into God's presence. And that, you know, I ain't going to need no rope, honey, because I'm coming out, because I'm going in prepared. They had one whole year to do every single thing and be prepared to go in there. Now, whether they put a rope on them or not, I don't know. You know, maybe somebody was wrong. I have no idea the veracity of that thing, but I got to thinking on that, and I go, now, if I was a high priest, sweetheart, you can put a rope on me, but I intend on coming out of here, because I am going to make sure I check. I mean, talk about in the military, you check your uniform. You know, you even get them those little strings, you know, those like little strings that come on uniform. You have to get your magnifying glass out and go over your whole uniform before you show up someplace. You get them little things around your collar and around your pockets and around on the leggings and stuff like that. You got to clip them off, and every one of us has done that to be in perfect condition for an inspection. Now, if we're doing that, you know the high priest is going to do it, and you'll see what the high priest had to do in regards to that. And this is the ramp leading up to the altar. This is another one of the picture of the tabernacle that someone had, you know, a replica that they had actually set up. We know, of course, they didn't have photos back then, and but there were some drawings that we had that we've seen over the years. So there's a little leads up to the altar up there, and this is the outer court. And there were specific. Now, there's little floodlights here. You can see those were not there in. In the wilderness, you understand that, you know, these, yeah, there's solar-powered floodlights here, but this was set up so people could go and visit and actually see the life-size replica here, so I have to just mention that, so, but this is how it was set up, and they were made with linens and things, and this is the laver that the priests had to wash in, and this is a little closer up. You can see the red here. You can see the white and the red, and this is like a bluish coating. We'll cover that. They all have meaning. It's so powerful when we get to that. And and that's the little curtain that divides the holy place, and then there's another one that's down here that divides up. This is the holy place, and that's the curtain here that goes into the holiest of holies. And you can see the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the shewbread. And we've got some little better pictures of that. This is another picture, a depiction of what it would look like inside the holy place with the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the shewbread, and the priesthood here. And that's the veil that goes into the holiest of holies. Now remember, in the temple, when they build their permanent tabernacle, when Jesus died, that veil from top, that's significant, that veil from top to bottom was ripped. That means there's no more keeping anyone from the most holy place. That was such a joyous thing. Now, and also, these veils weren't just a little piece of like cloth like we have, you know, for our banners and stuff. These were heavy-duty draperies that aren't just going to be ripping. I mean, you'd have a hard time even with knives and swords to hack away at them, but that thing ripped from top to bottom on the permanent temple that they had in Jerusalem. And another shot of what the holy place might have looked like with the candles or oil lamps, the shewbread table, and the altar of incense, and then that other veil for that. Another shot of the altar of incense. You can see the hot coals in here, and then that would have the materials of what the savorings or whatever they would call that for the incense would go in there. And then the lampstand by the holy place. And then this one is a picture of the shewbread. And if anyone wants to count the bread, how many loaves do we have here? Guess, if you don't already know. 12. 12 loaves of bread. 12 tribes of Israel. 12 gates in the kingdom. 12 apostles. I mean, you know, now some people dive into the numerology of the scriptures. I tend to leave those explanations to the Lord. He'll let us know. But there is tremendous numerology in the scriptures and significant meaning for God. They also had some wine with the bread that they had. And, hello? Anyone thinking of the Last Supper here? You know, the bread and the wine, absolutely amazing. Now, there's always an indication of, well, the priest drank wine, and I'm going to drink wine. I'm not going to get into a drinking conversation here. But God did say that his priesthood did not drink strong drink, and wine is a mocker of strong drink. So, you know, we have some decisions to make on some of the things we do. So when they say there was wine, it doesn't mean there's some drunken thing going on in the holy place. The wine that they drank, many of the priests drank what they called wine. But it was the pre-fermented. It was like you'd get grape juice or apple juice before it was fermented, because they didn't have all the capacity that we do. That stuff was pretty freshly squeezed, because you leave that stuff sitting around the heat out here without any refrigeration, it's going to be souring up on you pretty much on that. So that they did have some wine with that, with their bread. Then this is the Holy of Holies and the High Priest. We're going to have, this is very important piece of apparel. We're going to cover all the apparel. That has significant meaning in our spiritual walk. And in the Holy of Holies was the Ark of the Covenant. Now this had a thing here so it could be carried. It had a rail there so it could be carried. But this is the cherubim, which were built on the top. And when the high priest came in, this is the mercy seat. Sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice on the mercy seat. Boy, I tell you, God knows what he's talking about. We go through all of this. But there also was something inside the Ark of the Covenant. Remember the Ten Commandments? The rod of Aaron that budded, and a bowl of manna. And so that has... You know, I mean, we'll go over the significance of those things too, in terms of the bread and life coming out from that which is dead, and then the commandments of God. Oh, I tell you, this is so rich. You know, and yet they would have understood it from the level of the law. You know, they would have preciously put these things in there. They would have preciously had the bread. They would have preciously trimmed the lamps and put the oil in. They would have, in obedience and joy and awe, done all of these things. But nothing went in like it does now. Now, they had great joy. They were touched by the Spirit of God, but they had no indwelling of the Spirit of God. But their obedience was their sacrifice before God, and they dutifully did that. And then the high priest, this is called the ephod, and boy, I tell you, that thing, guess how many stones we got in here? How many gems? 12. One for each tribe. And each one, wait till you see what kind of stone and what each one does. Blow your socks off. That's a little bit higher thing. Now, this was folded over. This was like the front piece. It was folded over in half, because they put some other stones inside, the Urim and the Thummim. And there's a lot of study on what the Urim and the Thummim was, and some people think it was like, you know, witchcraft or something, and it wasn't. They were just, they were stones that were used. That's how God spoke to his people through some of these things. And why did he do that? Because the Spirit of God was not indwelling, not even the high priest. It says the Spirit of God did what? It descended upon them. It did give them wisdom. It did give them all these things, the miracles that they did and the stuff that happened and how they called out to God and what they did and understanding. And I mean, you know, Moses standing there, you know, lift up your rod. What have I given you? He lifts it up and the sea's part. That wasn't Moses. This was the Spirit of God descending on him. He didn't have the Spirit of God within. So these are things that God used because Jesus hadn't come yet. So very, very powerful when you look at that. Every single event, every person and circumstance of substance that's recorded in the Old Testament was holy and perfect meaning. It had a holy and perfect meaning, and it makes holy and perfect sense, as we can see as we continue the study with this. This tabernacle was to be the worship center of the Israelites while they were on their way to the Promised Land. So this was their temporary one. They had to rebuild all of the time. And here's some numbers I had for you. I don't remember if I gave them in your handout. 37 chapters of the Bible record the laws about and the description of the tabernacle. There's 13 chapters in Exodus, and that's on the tabernacle and the priesthood. There's 18 chapters in Leviticus, and that's on the sacrificial system. And there's a further mention of the tabernacle in Deuteronomy, 2 chapters, and Hebrews, 4 chapters. Very, very powerful to do that. Now, I apologize for how this... I'm going to use a couple of overheads from this point here. I apologize how that came out. My ink ran out just at the last minute there, so that... It's not as clear as I would like to see, but I think you can follow along. You have that in your handout. The major word pictures from the tabernacle, remember we talked about three things, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, mind, will, and emotions, the three parts of the tabernacle. Well, there's three other things that as we see through the tabernacle, and that's Jesus. That whole tabernacle talks about the blood sacrifice, the forgiveness of sins, and the presence of God. It also talks about the church. It's talking about the church, the vehicle of the indwelling of the Lord and His people. And the church meaning, not the building now, the church meaning the body of Christ, each one is now that individual temple. And the believer, and this is what we talked about earlier, the body as the outer court, the soul as the holy place, and your spirit as the holy of holies. Very, very powerful. And there's a tremendous harmony in God's Word with these messages and the parallel to our bodies and to all the things that we just talked about. Now there's some reasons for the tabernacle. And I wanted to just review that with you. The reasons for the tabernacle. Probably the most important reason is one that man doesn't like to admit. And the first one is God knew that man could not keep His laws. And we've all heard people say, oh, I'm a good person. I haven't murdered anyone. I haven't robbed a bank. I'm a good person. No, God knows that none of us could keep His law because of that broken nature. So reasons for the tabernacle were to have a place where the people could go and they could worship God and they could hear from God. He established a tabernacle as a type of Christ just to hold the people until Jesus came. And He could send a message through the tabernacle and all the things that we're going to see, that it introduces us to God. In the tabernacle there was a reconciliation to God. The picture of the wall around the tabernacle, it separates us from what's unholy. The light in there talks about lighting our way. It satisfies not only God, what goes on in the tabernacle, but us. It allows for intercession, being in God's presence, and for an eventual communion in the very presence of God. Now, the tabernacle allowed that. The tabernacle let them do that without this indwelling of the Spirit that we have. But we continue the exact same thing today. Now, the symbolism in the tabernacle, there were some spiritual things going on here. I think I'll probably switch that all over to a PowerPoint at another point, but the symbolism in the tabernacle, and you have that in your handout also. There was a spiritual meaning in even the smallest details, and we'll see that as we go along. There were certain metals and fabrics, certain skins, wood, oil, spices, incense, different gems and things were used. They were specific. You couldn't just, you know, like in a recipe, you can kind of, you know, switch something out, put something else in there, it'll come out fairly the same. You know, you can't do that. Nothing could be switched out. It had to be exact. You had to have acacia wood. You had to have shittim wood. You had to have gold. You had to have silver. There were certain things that had to be done in a certain way, and it was very important that they did that, because in doing that, that gives us the picture of what God wants us to know today. And some of the things, just a couple of quick examples before we get into the actual portion itself. The tabernacle was built on a silver foundation, not a gold. And I thought, wow, that's really true, because silver is stronger than gold. Gold is much more malleable. It's very soft. So silver was a much stronger foundation. And it reminds us, who's our firm foundation? I mean, this all goes right back to the scriptures. Jesus is our firm foundation. And what a depiction of that. And then there was a gold overlaid. There was a kind of wood, it's called shittim wood, and it was incorruptible. So I don't know whether it came with a natural oil in it or something, like we have pressure? Cedar wood is very similar to that. So it was a wood that was an incorruptible wood, so to speak. It lasted a long, long time. And they had a gold overlaid over it, and then they had a gold within it. So when they made the gold pieces, it was absolutely amazing because they had to have gold on the outside, wood, and then gold. So the outside gold is God the Father, the central wood is God the man, meaning Jesus, and the gold within is the Holy Spirit. So even how they had to put the wood together was a symbol of who God is in the triune God. Now, again, there were tremendous things that they had to go through that they didn't know. They didn't understand any of the things that we have today. Now, I want to go over the tabernacle a little bit and the courtyard with the laver. And I have a couple of extra. These are they weren't the nice color ones that I had on the PowerPoint, but these give us a couple of pictures here of what I wanted to show you. And that again was the tabernacle in the wilderness. And I want to show you that one because it shows how the tribes all came around. See how they set up. Now, those are very small tents, you know. It was much larger than this because they had hundreds of thousands of people. But each one of these was one of the different tribes. And again, it shows you how they set that up in the center, and then they put all of their materials around that. And then I have another one that just shows another overlay. And I'm doing a lot of the pictures here because I want you to get the symbols in there. I want you to see it from different viewpoints and how long the things were. I have some of the lengths and the stuff. It shows that in cubits, and I transferred it over. That's like 75 feet altogether with a 30-foot entrance here and 150 feet along here. And again, it shows you that outer courtyard. It's separated by the wall is all around. The wall of curtains is all around the whole place. The courtyard, the holy place, the most holy place. And we'll just leave that up for right now so you can take a look at that. I don't want to get into the priesthood just yet. The courtyard. One of the things that we can see, it forms a hedge around the tabernacle. It wasn't just an open place. So it wasn't just plop it. It wasn't just an open place. You had to approach God a certain way. I mean, he already was giving the message. Is that crooked or is that just me? He was already giving the message. You can't do it your way. It's my way. And people don't like that of God. It's my way or the highway. But his way is the best. So he set this up. You just can't walk in all over the place. This is a separation. And what's powerful, it's a line of defense, all this, against outside influences. This actually marks off something here. This should be marked. This is our body here. This is us as the temple of God today. And he said he surrounds us with songs of deliverance. But we should make sure that we do not get involved outside in the outside influences. This curtain, this wall rather, of material all the way around it, is a message for us. It's a line of defense against the outside world and its influences. It was a big reminder when you're walking around the whole camp and everyone has their stuff all set up. It was a big reminder, hey, something special's over here. This is the God area. It was a big reminder to approach God differently than you did your friend or your spouse or the animals or anything else. We are to approach God in awe and humility and reverence. And this temple, just us looking at these pictures today in 2011, should give us that same sense. Whoa, there is a special place in God. And each one of us find that special place in God. Not just in the morning when you're reading the scriptures or doing a devotional. Each one of us have had experiences when he touches us during the day, when we are aware of his presence. Now, you don't have to be aware like I'm feeling something. There's just a sweetness. There's just a calmness. There's just a peace. Don't misunderstand that. That is the presence of God. The peace that surpasses all understanding is the presence of God. Very, very powerful. And the only one entrance, Boatea. a little piece of information about that one entrance. Guess what? It was facing the east. The east is where the camp of Judah always parked its tents. And guess what? The lineage of Judah is where Jesus had his lineage.
Whoa.
Whoa. So this entrance right here faced the east. And the east is where they camped the tribe of Judah. And that is where Jesus' lineage came from. You have to go to Matthew and read that to find the lineage. The first chapter of Matthew, be glad to do that. So it's just very, very powerful. So that one way is Jesus. And in John 10:9, he talks about being the door. Jesus is the door. Very, very powerful. Now the brazen altar, which is right here, that's the first thing. Whenever a person entered the courtyard, because the common people could enter the courtyard, that was the first. Now, it wasn't just some little thing. It wasn't like, you know, one of those Weber grills. You know, I mean, it wasn't like a little barbecue grill you could walk past. That thing was big. You saw that in one of the other pictures. That thing is huge, because they tossed hunks of animals in there for their sacrifice. So very, very powerful. But anyone who wasn't an Israelite couldn't go in here. You could only come in if you were God's people. And it's a reminder, this altar, to be reconciled with God before being able to be in His presence. Big fat reminder. Our very access to God is through a blood sacrifice. The access that they had to go through to get here had to be with a blood sacrifice. Now, God made it clear, you cannot murder. So there's never, ever, ever going to be a human sacrifice. Pagans did human sacrifices. You know the devil was leading them on that. Pagans threw in virgins and babies and infants into the volcanoes and all that trash that went on back then. But no, there's an animal sacrifice because that was symbolic. The only one who could have Jesus give up his life and ask him to do that was God asking Jesus to do that. And he was never murdered. He gave up his life. Now, this altar wasn't fancy either. It was just a little place that had it, and it wasn't just something they did on a Sunday or a Tuesday. This was burning coals that had an offering there all the time. The people were constantly coming in and bringing their lambs or their pigeons or whatever it was that was within the realm of their financial ability to do the sacrifice. We still have a financial sacrifice that we're supposed to make today. You know what I mean? God talks about that. So, I mean, a lot of these things are all, they're interwoven. The thing that most amazes me in researching and looking over this stuff and sitting at the feet of the Lord is how it is interwoven. It's so, so powerful. And this altar, it wasn't fancy at all. And the ashes in here were used to burn the incense. So the ashes from all this went up to the altar of incense. These things that had already been covered by the blood, they already had the blood sacrifice on them, they were put into the altar of incense. Your praise can't be acceptable unless it's clean. And we've had many teachings on how sin actually hinders prayer. Now, God has mercy and compassion, but you're not going to have the life and the blessings you could. I found that amazing. The requirement was to take those coals and put that up in the altar of incense. And the fact that that was common, that altar of sacrifice was common, speaks to us about Jesus too. He was a very common man. He did not come as a king. The Jews were looking for someone to come literally on a big white horse with an army, and so that Israel could then not be ever held in slavery again, that Israel would be famous and Israel would rule the world. They wanted to be like the Romans. They had a political viewpoint of what the Messiah was. And he came as a humble babe in a manger, and later on emptied on the back of a donkey, which is significantly less than a horse. I mean, the symbol of him on the donkey is one of tremendous humility, absolutely powerful. Now, this bronze, it was covered, the reason it's called a bronze altar, a sacrifice, is because it was made of wood, which would have burned if it wasn't covered with bronze. So they put the bronze over the acacia wood so it wouldn't be burned up. And what is amazing is that Jesus was our sacrifice. He wasn't consumed either. He rose from the dead. He wasn't consumed. He rose from the dead. I'm going, yikes. Wow, are you speaking to us, Lord? Way back then. This gives such power to God's truth. Such power to God's truth. Now, the sacrificial blood, Moses had to sprinkle blood on the law to seal the covenant. And the high priest, now it's a carrying over of that, the high priest had to sprinkle blood on the mercy seat once a year. And then I want to be able to finish up tonight with something very important in terms of the sacrificial blood. I'm going to do that in just a second because I want that to be the last thing. I want to skip over to the laver for just a second. This was a bronze laver, and it was covered in bronze also. The priest washed his hands and his feet in the water. And the reason it had to be bronze was that the water cleansed the priest. I mean, we see the symbolism in that. But when the priest looked in the bronze, when the water was in there, he could actually see his reflection and check to see if he had any dirt on him. Because they had dirt because they were handling all of these things here. So they could actually see their face in the water and the bronze. And so they had to be clean before God because the priest would die if there was one spot of dirt left on him. Absolutely amazing. So God made a point. Nothing unclean can come into God's presence. And it's really okay if someone dozes off here tonight. This is at the end of the day. I am trusting God's Spirit to go into the hearts. So if it bypasses your ears, it's really going to be okay. Don't you ever worry about that. The sacrifice it takes for the people to come, to worship God, God honors that. To hear some of His Word, to be emboldened, to be enlivened, to be enriched in God. That's what God's looking at. So he knows what's going on here. So nothing unclean. This is a word picture, nothing unclean. But this washing, and we have the same thing. We've got to wash off the road dirt. We pick up stupid ideas. We pick up the ideas of the world, bad habits. We've got to get rid of the road dirt. But the thing on the blood, the priests were dedicated to do their work. And they were anointed on the right thumb with oil. They were anointed with oil on the right thumb, and that was to consecrate their works, whatever they put their hand to. Their right ear was anointed to consecrate what they hear, that it would be from God. You know, we often say, keep your ear really close to the lips of the Lord. So they concentrated, anointed their right ear, and they anointed their right toe to consecrate where they will walk. Very powerful. So tonight, now, next week, what we're going to do is next week we're going to have on the teaching on the holy place. So this was the courtyard, the things for that, the entrance, and all that stuff in there. Next week is going to be the holy place. But and when do we get to the priesthood? Oh my gosh, the priesthood itself. Never mind what the priest wears. We got a lot of good stuff to go here. But before we leave tonight, I want to anoint every one of us, the right thumb for what you put your hand to, your right ear for what you hear, may it be God's truth only and not the foolishness of the world, and your right toe that you would walk where and how God would have you to walk.